Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined once again this afternoon by Brian. For those of you who may have heard him on the show, I think it was a few weeks ago that we first had him on talking about the sustainability work that he's been doing here at the monastery. And it's really a long-term project, and we realized that it's quite exciting and the application of it is very broad, and that possibly folks can follow along with us and maybe implement some of the things that we're starting to implement here at the monastery in their own homes. And so we have a commitment to bring Brian on regularly to tell us about what the new things are that he's working on and maybe in the long run help us to see how those can be applied in our own homes. So welcome back, Brian.
Howdy. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. So what's new in the world of the Zen Monastery Sustainability Project?
What's new for me today is I'm actually very sore because I've been digging trenches again and doing water catchment. And so on our little proto food forest hillside now, we have the healthiest, happiest vetch of all time.
Healthiest, happiest vetch? Is that what you said?
Yeah. So you know,
that's sort of ground cover that has those thorns that reach right out at you.
Yeah, they're not the most pleasant folks around, but they are actually really useful. They're a weed that happens to be a legume, so it fixes the nitrogen and does all sorts of nice things. So I was very happy. You know, got back to the property and went, oh, there's you know, there's vetch everywhere. This is excellent.
Yeah, yeah, and it's funny. You were explaining to me a little bit earlier today how seeing what's growing and how it's growing there's a lot of clues in that to tell you what's going on underneath the soil.
Yeah, absolutely. So like right now on that hillside, it's very much a bring your own protein sort of situation. So any plant that wants to really grow and thrive there has to have a way of producing protein, because it's just that is not a nutrient that's available in the soil right
now.
So that's it's wonderful in that the soil is telling us exactly what it needs. So if vetch is thriving here, then we need to look at, okay, how can we bring protein into the soil in the form of nitrates in a way that's a little more pleasant. And so we have on the agenda now, as soon as we're out of the frost danger, we're going to plant some perennial legumes, some various kind of not really edible legume species, but they grow bushes and shrubs, and they'll be there for a while, and so they can then add the nitrogen to the soil so all the plants have access to protein, and so that they can compete with weeds like vetch.
So in other words, kind of the first stages are looking at what is your, based on what's growing there, what does the soil need, and then planting what the soil needs as a way of moving towards when we'll eventually plant the things that will create the food for us.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. And a huge part of that for me, and I think that it's something that folks can really follow along with, is it's really important for that not to dig up soil, because a big part of sort of the key of the soil economy and all the different nutrients and whatnot are fungal species. So you need a nice healthy mat of fungus spread out kind of just underneath the surface level in all of your soil, because then they'll go over to the legume species that you plant, has a bunch of extra nitrogen, and say, hey, what's happening here? I've got all these micronutrients that I've pulled out of the soil that your roots can't get access to. Why don't you give me some of that nitrogen? I'll trade these to you. And then they turn around and they go over to your fruit trees and whatnot that are producing a bunch of sugar and say, hey, you need a lot of nitrogen right now. Why don't I give you some nitrogen? You give me some sugar.
That's great. So it literally is. It's an economy. It's a plant economy. I'll give you some of the sugar if you'll give me some of your nitrogen.
Exactly. It's this entire underground plant economy that over 90% of all terrestrial plant species are adapted. They have special adaptations in their roots, which are like little ports that fungi can come and grow their hyphae into. Hyphae is the elongated cells that form the body of the fungus, and they literally grow right into the root so that they can exchange nutrients.
And so the practical application for that, as you were saying, is don't till your soil.
Yeah, wherever possible, avoid turning it over. And that's, you know, that's such a fundamental, basic practice in agriculture all over the world, is tilling the soil, because it aerates the soil, it introduces oxygen, which is necessary for roots to grow, and it allows, you know, breaks it up and allows the roots to spread out more easily.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, we're used to walking on our soil and we compact it, and then we have to come back and do something to remove this problem that we've created. And so there's actually a lot of good information online about, you know, how to have a no-till garden bed, and how, you know, what are the practices that you can do to promote a healthy soil economy and have increasing fertility on your plots year on year and not have to turn the soil over. So,
and so basically let that soil economy do its thing without disturbing it.
Yeah, my favorite way to think about it is, you know, what would our economy look like if we tore down all of our roads and all of our, you know, freight infrastructure and whatnot at the beginning of every year, and we had to rebuild all of that over again before we could get started on the business of actually producing something.
Oh.
And that's what we're doing to our soil when we turn it over.
Well, that's a clear metaphor.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a big problem. If you actually look at all around the world, everywhere that there's arable soil that's in use, it's turning into desert. And that is sort of, has been historically the ticking time bomb in every civilization. When you look at the rise and fall of civilizations, soil degradation is a huge part of it. It's just there's a pretty short time scale, you know, 1,000 years or so, before agricultural practices based on plowing have destroyed the soil. And so you look at places that are described in antiquity, you know, the land of milk and honey, it's a desert now. That's true everywhere in the world. And we had it in the United States with the Dust Bowl in the early 20th centuries. Huge swaths of China are dealing with that right now. They're having the same cycle.
So the term food forest, then, from if I'm understanding what you're saying, really refers to feeding ourselves in a way that's symbiotic with the way that the earth naturally cares for itself, for its own soil.
Exactly. It's all about building systems that are pro-human life and also pro-soil life and build fertility. And so with the Food Forest Project that we're doing, what we're trying to do is sort of mimic the way that a not necessarily a climax, but a pre-climax forest naturally develops, and the sorts of nutrient flows that naturally occur, and the sorts of nutrient infrastructure that supports ongoing increasing fertility.
Boy, it really mirrors practice perfectly, doesn't it? Because it's like the solution that's best for all is always going to be the best one. You know, we have to do this because in order to support humans, we have to till up the soil. Or, well, no, you have to leave the soil and you got to leave, you know, then humans aren't going to be able to. But there's always a middle way where the thing that works for all beings, for everyone, for everything.
Yeah, and it's for me, it's a lot of finding that balance, finding that whole approach, and having the recognition going into it that in some ways you may have to do a little bit more work. You can't always have exactly what we want instantaneously and expect that to be a sustainable course.
Yep. Well, and what that points at, I think, is on the level of kind of the heart and living this way, is that what we realize, I mean, you said it perfectly, actually, in the first interview a few weeks ago, that being unconscious is fundamentally unsustainable. So even if there's a quick, easy way to grow a huge tomato plant, it's in the end, it isn't even going to be the easy way. It's going to be destructive, and it's going to create all kinds of things we have to clean up later, and it's not a joyful way to live, and it's, you know, it's not better at all. So we're coming right up against the hour, Brian. So I wonder if people are interested in learning, like, for example, more about a food forest and how to do that for themselves. I guess that's just an online research project, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I happen to really enjoy a lot of material that comes out of the Permaculture Research Institute in Australia.
Okay, Permaculture Research Institute. Okay.
Yeah, and they, you know, maybe we can put a link up somewhere, but they do a lot of information on, you know, how to set up a no-till bed in your garden so that you have increasing fertility year on year and you're creating systems that are a good environment for fungi and they create a good environment for your plants. And, there's plenty of information on that on their website, on YouTube. There are lots of just folks who are doing this kind of work and really trying to find best practices and whatnot. And it's something that I think actually does lend itself pretty well to, you know, learning these things and applying these things on a small scale and then seeing how that information can be used to make our lives more sustainable on a larger scale.
Sure, yep. Well, we again really, really appreciate the effort and energy and research and time and care and all that you're putting into it, and thanks for sharing it with us on the Good News Update.
For having me on.
All right. Good night, Brian.
Good.
Okay, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Brian. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry. Good afternoon, Sherry. Sherry, are you there?
Oh, here I am.
Oh, there you are. Well done.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness, that was scary for just a second. I noticed that at least where in my world, Jen and Brian's connection seemed a little shaky, and I thought, oh, no, here we go again. It's going to be all of us. So how are you?
I'm great. That was funny. I just, as I was waiting for you to respond, what occurred to me was the African saying that Jackie mentioned to us at the bridge walk of, are you awake?
Aha. Uh-huh.
As a greeting, are you there?
Yes. Are
you here?
Are you there? Yes, are you here?
Are you here?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Great.
Well, that was a fun little conversation to be in on. I'm always so inspired by those. I can't remember if I said this or to whom I said it, but Brian was telling me at one point about a food forest, like the one he's working on for us at the monastery, that is somewhere in Vietnam, and has been growing there in the same place, sustaining the people there for over 1,000 years.
Oh my goodness!
And so it's to me. I get a big thrill. You know, I love that story about the old guy, he's 96 or something like that, and he's planting trees, and somebody says, you know, what is that about? You know, you're never going to see these grow. And you know, his in essence, his response is, that's not why I'm planting them. And so, yes, of course, we have no idea when we take on these kinds of projects where they're going to lead. We're doing it because it's the best we can do to say thank you for all we've received and take the best care we can take of what we're charged with being stewards for. But I can't help thinking about, you know, this kind of movement and more people learning about these kinds of things and taking them on and slowly, slowly bringing the earth back around to a natural state. And in 1,000 years, you know, once again, the whole planet will look like the Garden of Eden.
Yes, it's fabulous. It's a brilliant vision.
Yeah.
And so, inspires me to do my part today toward that goal.
Yes, because we can. And, of course, the one that I'm most excited about, I'm hoping is coming up in the, you know, maybe the next time Brian's on or the time after, which is the aquaponics, because I can't wait. I cannot wait until that's part of the monastery, because it's just you know, it's just kind of everything that, as Jen was saying, you know, what we're talking about is the way we treat the soil and all of that. It's so such a perfect mirror for practice, which of course is why we're so excited about it. And so to see these systems being developed and how we can live in that state of acknowledgement of the oneness of all life, and to see it in form. It's kind of hard to see it sometimes, but with these kinds of systems, we begin to sense, we begin to be aware of the interconnectedness of all life. And it's a good thing to be aware of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is a great privilege. Very fun.
Mm-hmm.
I have some announcements here, Sherry.
All right.
The There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat will be offered May 4th through 11th. It's our classic 8-day retreat offered in the beauty of nature at the monastery. And at the retreat, participants gain a clearer perspective on how they live their lives and on how to find compassion both for themselves and for others. Coming up after that is the Rest and Be Thankful retreat, which is returning to the monastery May 17th through 19th. It's a shorter weekend retreat. Includes walks in nature, art and yoga workshops, periods of meditation, and simple, delicious meals to allow your heart to open to the generosity of life. And a new retreat offered for the first time this year, How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything. That'll be at the monastery June 26th through 30th. And the retreat uses an exploration of how we do anything as a clue to how we deny ourselves compassionate self-acceptance. So visit schedule.liveincompassion.org to see this schedule or to sign up for any of these events. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So here we go.
Who do we have?
First caller.
Hi, this is Jen in Pennsylvania.
Well, hello, Jen. How are you?
I'm very well.
Good. What's going on?
Well, I wanted to give a shout out for being a monthly donor for lots of good reasons. And one is because you get these great guidance days, and I had a wonderful guidance session, and I was really grateful for it.
Uh-huh. So in those, you get a chance to just talk about whatever you want to talk about in privacy with somebody who is skilled in facilitation and can assist you to have a broader perspective and greater insight about what's going on. Is that the case?
That is the case, yeah. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's a really wonderful thing. I mean, I find it to be wonderful to be a monthly donor for a lot of reasons. Getting to support that which supports my heart is a big part of it too, as has been talked about. But yes, I had this just wonderful guidance session, and now I've just been looking a little bit at. So what? It's funny. I have this sense of like conditioning, just not wanting me to be able to articulate this or see this. So I don't know.
Uh-huh.
We'll see what comes out. But. It just kind of getting a chance to see how much there is the body, the habitual body place, the way of being in my body is the habit is to feel that there's something wrong in the body. And just to, you know, maybe even before, you know, all that movement, sensation, thought, you know, before there's even a thought, just that it feels so familiar to go around carrying the body in such a way that this must mean there's something wrong, and that's just such a strong habit. And so I had an opportunity to see that, you know, you've been saying this for a little while, so you might laugh, but you know, that there isn't anything wrong, that, you know, that there's there's no problem. And, but yet that pull to just, you know, be in a body that feels that there's a problem, that there's something wrong, just kind of causes then, you know, there to be more believability to everything from there.
Yeah, and Jen, is it the case that, so you're going around in life And the attention is being directed to the body in a way that implies there's a problem? I mean, is it looking for tension or pain or something like that?
Well, yeah, sometimes there is, you know, I've had a lot of interesting experiences with this practice, and I don't know if, you know, there's like Dr. John Sarno does a lot of work about, it seems sort of like awareness practice for the body to me, you know, looking at back pain and how much of a strong mind connection there is to what goes on with those kinds of things. So, yeah, sometimes there's, you know, back pain or migraines or things like that are meant to convey that. And sometimes it's the things that, like, we might label anxiety or tension in the shoulders or just kind of like, you know, fearful, something's wrong, I've got to protect against life because there's always a problem. Of course there's a problem, you know, that's always what's going on. And that's how, like, that's the way that the body is carried or something. I don't know if that makes sense. That's how it feels.
Yeah. So there's tension in the shoulders.
Uh-huh.
And there's tension in the shoulders because there's a karmic habit of tension in the shoulders, right? Which I think is, you know, synonymous with human beings, at least in this culture.
Yeah.
and so that's what's there. And then the tension signals that there's danger, right? There's something that I'm tensed up against. So it's just kind of assumed because it must be the case because look at the tension in my shoulders. There must be something. And so if there's nothing real in life, then what's wrong is how you carry your body.
Sure, yeah. I don't even know if it has to get that far because usually I think there's, you know, falling for some piece of content that can get inserted there. But, yeah, it's just waking up into it and constantly, you know, like now I've been seeing these spaces of kind of remembering again, oh, there's nothing wrong. There's no problem. Like even when there is, you know, challenging content and there are things going on, but there's nothing wrong. You know, there's no problem.
Right.
So seeing the relaxation of like, okay, yeah, this is whatever's going on and, you know, I'm adequate to this and okay, let's breathe and, you know, and feeling that and how quickly, it goes actually back to directing the attention to me because it's like as soon, you know, it's just having those moments that as soon as I'm not paying attention, which is probably so much of the time, you know, then anything can come in and I'm right back to, I don't even know what it is most of the time, you know, but something's wrong and I'm just, of course there's a problem and of course I'm doing something wrong and there's a problem. Mm-hmm. It's just so habitual.
Yeah, you are so very right and you are so very not alone in this. I'll give you an example. So my knee went out. My leg stopped functioning.
Uh-huh.
And it was super painful, and I, you know, can't sit, can't barely walk, can't jog, can't, you know, nothing. And but what is it? And nobody can figure out what it is. Nobody can figure out what it is. I go to all kinds of people, and nobody can figure out what it is. And so I'm practicing with it, and I'm practicing with it, and I'm practicing with it. And one day it drops in that I always sit with my legs crossed, the right one over the left. And it just occurred to me that that could be the problem, that pulling my femur head out of the socket and
mm-hmm.
that putting a strain on all of this, you know. And so what I decided to do is start crossing my legs a different way. And so now the left leg is crossed over the right way. Like, so it becomes a practice opportunity rather than a focus on what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Because
yeah.
I want my leg to work. I'm really invested in my leg working. And so I really do want to find out what's going on. So there's something wrong is so fiendish because it keeps us from what is available to us, which is there's something going on here. I want to find out what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I want to delve into this. I want to understand this completely. I want to know this inside and out. I want to take care of this leg.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if I just go to, oh, God, you know, there's something wrong, and now, you know, it's a short trip, as you indicate, to, you know, anxiety or despair or hopelessness or whatever it is, especially after I talk to two or three people I trust with these things, and they go, well, I don't know what that is.
right.
You know, so, yes, that there's something wrong is such a defense against us paying attention, being aware, and being present with. Because the body is giving us information all the time about what's going on with it, what it needs, the kind of care and attention that it needs.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't get to go with that because we run into this giant boundary line of, oh, my God, there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Yep. And in just relaxing into, okay, there's nothing wrong. There may be things going on, but let me, you know,
exactly.
me relax the body. Yeah. And see what's happening. Then everything's available to,
Precisely. Precisely. There isn't anything wrong. And this is something I really want to attend to.
Mm-hmm.
So all those physical things that you mentioned are things that, yeah, of course you want to attend to those.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to make a list.
know, right.
Well, first I want to attend to my third chakra, and then I want to, you know, and while I'm doing that and working with these sensations called anxiety, what does that have to do with my shoulders? And what's going on with my shoulders when I have a migraine? And when I have a migraine, what's going on with my third chakra?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how does all this, what's the connection here? Because we know it's all connected. So what is it? And it's not that we're finding this out in order to get rid of a symptom. We're finding out so that we can take care of our bodies in a way that prevents them from having symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something wrong. Just puts the giant monkey wrench in the works of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else in life, of course, as we know.
Yes, yeah. Then there's never an opportunity to just kind of check in and see, oh, what's actually happening here and who needs support or what body part needs support or what could be, it's been so helpful. I mean, I know in one way I feel like, oh, gosh, it's, you know, of course what you're always saying, but just seeing it somehow in the body connection too has just been really illuminating, just really helpful, just seeing how much just carrying there's something wrong in the body. There, of course, there's always a problem in the body, is just hindering, right, any chance to just drop all of that and see whatever's going on in the moment that can be attended to.
Yes, and the other point that I think is really important for us to focus on with this, and what you're doing, of course, is critically important, is how often it's something really simple.
Yes.
If we go down the road of, oh, my God, there's something wrong, I need to check myself into a hospital and get a battery of tests done so that I can get a label, so that I can get a drug, you know, it's, again, all it is I'm crossing my legs in one way for enough years that finally my body can't compensate any longer.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad I didn't let somebody talk me into, one person said that predicted that it was a tumor on the bone.
Oh, gosh, yeah. You know,
I'm going to go with, I'm going to change how I cross my legs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I find that too. Like so many times it's like, you know, I'm cold and I need to see what I can do to make the body warm. Like, I don't just, you know, it's the simplest thing.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's why
absolutely.
I'm so tense. I'm cold.
Yeah, the body just needs some kind of simple care, right?
Yeah,
definitely.
That's a perfect example,
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so grateful for all the support to work with these things. So thank you. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Oh, hello, Catherine. How are
Hi,
you?
Hi, Sherry. I am doing well. I have a feeling what I want to talk about is connected to the conversation you just had. Yesterday, I was watching myself feel the whole day feel real stuck in this low energy. The physical sensation was something I would have described as depression, and just real stuck, low energy, no enthusiasm, and I started watching, okay, so what are the thoughts here? And I believe you have said if there's depression, there's probably self-hate. And so I was like, well, is that going on and what's going on? And kind of maybe early afternoon, what came up was, you know, there really is nothing wrong. I'm just feeling real stuck in this energy. I'm stuck in this physical, you know, I was kind of looking for, is there self-hate? What's going on? And then there was some self-hate about the way I was feeling.
Yes.
You know, that was coming in. So, and there's this idea that if I'm not happy and carefree and, excited, there's something wrong.
Rather than this is yet another thing to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
Because
there's a whole story that's going with it, right?
There's
a label that goes with it, and we both know there can be a dramatic descent into hell states that can go with it. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I was recording and listening, and what came up through that was just basically this may be just something I just have to breathe my way through, and just stay present. And I went to work. And I had some things to do in the evening, and then I just kept going. And today I woke up and the total energy had totally changed. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, I didn't really do anything with any of this except just watch it and just come back to, you know, stay as present as possible. But I never, quote, fixed it, end quote. You know, I never felt better.
But you did what was essential. You didn't believe what karmic conditioning, self-hate, would have told you.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't
yeah.
let it mean what it would have said that it means. And,
yes.
then step onto that slide and start down into, oh, my God, now what? Isn't this awful? What am I going to
mm-hmm.
do? I can't believe it. This is here
mm-hmm.
again. After all the work you've done, and now here
yes.
you are. You know, I mean, we know that story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and then ending up with life sucks, you know, which
yeah.
it doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's nothing wrong. There nothing's going on except that story and the
yes.
bodily sensation.
That's right.
You know,
the energy, right, the energy is what it is. Right? And,
yes.
And,
yes.
And we know. I mean, sometimes we have a lot of energy. Sometimes we don't have much. And all in between. And so there is an awareness of that in your physical being. And that's not a problem until the story kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't let it. So what
mm-hmm.
you did actually is huge, and it's everything. So
mm-hmm.
you stop and you look at, well, then what do I need? And what you came up with is, well, just be present with what's going on. Don't go with the story. Just stay here. Just breathe. Go about my day. Live my life. And the energy passed through, just like a, you know, a spring storm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At one point, the mentor said, you know, you may just have to ride this out, like you ride out a storm.
Mm-hmm.
And what the mentor also pointed out was, you know, you haven't gone into the dark room with this.
Yes.
That's the way. Yeah.
It's huge, Catherine.
It is
huge.
It's
why we practice, to get
mm-hmm.
to that point of saying, yeah, that's what's going on. Okay. The
mm-hmm.
sun doesn't always shine.
Yeah. And I'm noticing, today I was paying attention to the different energy, and I had a lot of more enthusiasm and just go energy, and I have an elderly cat who is having some symptoms, and so I took him to the vet this morning, and we're monitoring it, and I'm noticing that now there's a whole lot of anxiety about that, for what I would mm-hmm. call, you know, like the butterflies in the stomach kind of thing. So I'm just kind of watching that, because I can feel how that wants to pull me, or the, you know, the story conditioning wants to pull me into what a disaster, and I've got to stay up all night and worry about this cat.
Right. When
and,
in fact, he's an elderly cat.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
in the way that we are on our way to being, if we're fortunate, elderly people.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, all the systems are going to give up, and we're going to be deceased.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is
what we need to prepare for. In the sense that, in exactly the way you did this last episode, which is, I will be present for whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for saying that. Yeah, I want to be present with the cat, and
mm-hmm.
if this is the end, I want to be there. I want to be
yes.
there for the
yes.
cat.
Yes, fully.
And you know, and for the part of me who loves the cat.
Yes, and you know, I know I could say this to you, okay? So some people would say, well, that sounds mean. But the thing is, you really do want to be there for the cat.
Mm-hmm.
You can indulge whatever is going on with you afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
during this time, it really is his show.
Mm-hmm. I know, and oh, that you're so right. And conditioning wants to make it about me, about
oh.
the tragedy that this is for me, and how awful I feel, and I'm going to feel, and how I have to try to help the cat, and
yes.
you know, instead of just being present with the cat.
Precisely. Yeah.
Yeah, and taking care, doing
yeah.
what needs
yeah.
to be done. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because if I am confused and think that the cat's old age, possibly sickness and death, is about me, then that really is a tremendous disservice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's
yes.
So in the same way that it's trying to talk you into all of this way to be distracted from just being with him now, those same voices will attempt to brutalize you when you weren't even there. You were just so
mm-hmm.
focused on you. You were, you know, it's all about you and your selfishness.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Yeah, we can hear it right now, can't we?
Mhm. Oh yeah, and I've been through it before. I mean, I know,
mm-hmm.
you know, with my other
yeah.
animals,
yeah.
that this is conditioning's pattern
mm-hmm.
here, and I'm seeing that the anxiety starts making it real. It's like this, you know, whatever anxiety is, that energy starts. Conditioning starts using that energy, and it starts.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then it starts feeling really real. Well, I have all this anxiety. I have to do something. This
yes.
is too uncomfortable.
Yes.
You
know,
so
you know,
I have to leave the cat. Yeah.
Right. To once again focus on me. Only
me.
It's not even me. It's what conditioning is distracting me into.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You
yes.
know, again, I don't know if this fits for you. If something that you do, but it seems like it would be a really good time for you two to start having some heart-to-hearts, you know, if you haven't been along the way, and just start talking with him about what's coming and what you're looking at and how you want to be with him and his transition and, you know, like that. And I'm convinced. I don't know how much English they understand, actually. Sometimes I think way more than we think. But he'll understand the energy.
Mm.
And you being all right will be a big part of his ability to be all right.
Mm.
Right?
Right.
Because you know how sensitive they are to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're so dialed in to the energy of the, well, the other creatures around them and also the human beings.
Mhm. Mhm.
So it's okay. Talk it over.
That's beautiful. That gives me a great way to be with him. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like you would be with a human. Just like I bet we all hope somebody will be with us. You know, not
mm-hmm.
afraid to talk about what's really going on and to face
mm-hmm.
what's really going on and to know that our commitment is to get through this the best way we can with as open a heart and as much love and kindness and compassion as we can manage. And is it hard and is it painful and will we cry and will we miss one another? And yes, absolutely, that is going to be the case. That is. That's the price we pay for loving.
Mhm. Yeah. Yeah, and it's worth it.
It's so worth it.
Mhm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're very, very welcome.
I'm just so grateful.
Kiss the top of his little head for me, would you?
I will.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
Okay.
Good night.
Uh-huh. Bye. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. You're listening to Open Air. Sure, that was very moving. Very moving. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we just all want the same thing. You know, we just do.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Feel cared for, loved.
Mm-hmm. Appreciated. And And it's good to know we'll be missed.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, I don't know if I've told you about this, but at one point, someone very close to me was dying, and it was a long, slow process, and I was there visiting, and something was said, something came up, and my eyes filled with tears, and I started trying to tone it down, and I looked over and saw this look on my friend's face. And it was one of those just dropped in. And I said, "You like that, don't you? You like to see us cry, don't you? Because that says to you how much we're going to miss you." It was one of those moments of, just chuckling together, because the response was, "Yeah, you're right."
Yes.
You're right. Everybody wants that confirmation that you're loved and you'll be missed. And so why not say it all? Why this crazy stuff we have about death, where, we wait until somebody dies and then we say everything that we wanted to say.
Right.
Well,
right.
Let's not do that. So, just talk it over and cry together and get ready and let go and prepare and all in the moment. And it doesn't matter whether it's a human being or a little furry person or who it is. It's what and who we love.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Very beautiful. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Next caller, you are live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lisa from Pennsylvania.
Well, hello, Lisa.
Hey, hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. Well, so much. What I wanted to talk about tonight was something that had happened this last week in my life and in my practice. And I have an awareness coach, which is amazing. And just to plug that for anyone who wants to or has been thinking about it, I love the coaching. It's so helpful. And so one thing that came up with the help of my coach was my father passed away in January, and it was kind of unexpected, as far as, he was only 70, and it was the result of a procedure. It wasn't like he hadn't had a prolonged illness or anything like that. And so what was hard was that my father and I did not have a very good relationship while he was alive. And I had always kind of been chasing his love, and he didn't have a lot of time for me. But in the story of my family, however I had painted it or conditioning had painted it, he'd been the one that I really wanted to notice me and to spend time with me and to care for me. And this week I got a package in the mail from the woman that he had been living with when he died. And it was things that I had given my dad that he had kept all these years. And, it was such a strange thing, because I gave them to him. It never occurred to me I would get them back,
Right.
And they were things that he liked, they weren't things that I would have, wanted,
Right.
And so it was odd, it was odd and strange. And then there was kind of this moment of crying and sadness. And then I could feel conditioning kind of wanting to jump in and have ideas about what this would mean, and taking me down some story about regret or I don't know. I don't know what the heck the story was going to be.
Right. But something about lost opportunities or
a dark tunnel was definitely
on
the horizon.
Lost, all of those kinds of
Yeah.
Ending up with something that was going to be your fault.
Right. Some way that I was deficient or had failed or whatever, right. And so, you know, what I was working on this last week with my awareness coach was not following the story, like really not looking for what could be there other than drama or a story about me or it or whatever, and, you know, staying present. And so I did that with this. I just was like, you know, what if I don't look at any of that dark tunnel stuff? What if I stay with this? And what happened was it converted to this really, it converted to something so amazing that I'm still kind of reeling from it. It shifted, and what it shifted to was the sadness that I felt was really this real, and my coach actually helped with this, which was great, but it's true, this tenderness that I feel for that little girl who was always chasing after this love that wasn't, that love is mine to give from me to me. That is the perfect love that I'm looking for. That is the caring. That's who I want to spend time with me. That's who I want to notice me. That's who I want to think I'm valuable. That's who I've been giving presents to. All those presents came back to me in this amazing way, actually, because that's all for me, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure that this is a part of it, Lisa, that you've been looking at, but you know, your father loved you the best he could love you.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And we'll never know what that was for him. I mean, as you say, he kept these things from you for all of his life. And we
right.
don't tend to keep things that we don't care about, and certainly we don't keep things from people we don't care about. So whatever that was, it's what it was. And that little girl couldn't know that because, you know, especially when we're little people, we really are the center of the universe. It's only when we get older that ego is the center of the universe. But so, you know, it was all about her, and if she could be good enough and sweet enough and whatever, then he would love her the way she needed to be loved. And now as a grown-up, you realize it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You know, we can't be enough, whatever it is, to have somebody love us more than they can love us.
Right.
It just doesn't work like that. And so
right.
to realize that, as you say, all that love is already there. You wouldn't have been looking for it in him if it weren't already in you.
Yeah. Yeah, and yes, it rocked my world.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's just pretty amazing. It's just, you know, and I do get that. I do that, you know, my dad loved me however it was that he could, the way that he could. And I kind of got it finally in this way that it would never have been, I mean, you know, we could talk about his pluses and minuses and his faults and whether or not I liked him and whatever and whether or not he did right by me or whatever, all that stuff. But when it comes right down to it, like, the love that I was looking for was never going to be what
right.
it was never going to be that from this from
right.
any other person, and from him
right.
for sure, but from any other person. And it even extended to, you know, in my life I did finally find an external person, my spouse, you know, who I feel is this really incredible person who really likes me and loves me, and I really like that for him, you know, and like it's great. And it's still not enough. That's not, that
no.
won't be enough, you know?
No. And, you know, aside from Cinderella,
right.
it's not meant to be.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He loves you as much as he can love you, which is probably more than you'll actually ever know.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And you love him more than he's ever going to know. Right? But you love each other from the excess.
Yeah.
Right? So the first is to have all of that love for, and again, this is completely outside of ego. We're not talking about that at all. But it's the fullness of your heart and your being,
mm-hmm.
right? And then from that fullness, you offer to him all the love that you can offer.
Yeah.
Knowing full well that he'll never actually be able to receive it because it doesn't work that way.
Right.
Right? And so he can do
right.
the same thing, and you can have all this love, but it's all coming from a fulfillment within oneself.
Yeah.
It can never come from need. Need can never be satisfied, and it will never be fulfilled or fulfilling.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is.
And that's so good.
And
that's so much better. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's so much better. Because I have to tell you, like, I like spending time with myself. I like taking care of myself. I like me. I think I'm fascinating. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, but it's like, and it's great. And it's the love I always wanted. And it's, I mean, it really is, you know, I feel so like getting down on the ground and doing whatever to practice, you know, bowing or whatever, because it's just, I never, no one would have ever been able to tell this to me 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Oh my gosh, you know.
A year ago. You knew it.
Yeah.
You knew it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was holding on.
If somebody had said it, you'd say, yes, I know that. And then you have a direct experience, and suddenly knowing is a completely different animal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think this, the courage that I see for myself of holding on, really trying to work hard, getting an awareness coach, being serious about, like, no, I really want to do this, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
I'm just so grateful. I really am. I can't express it enough. Like,
oh,
Lisa, grateful.
I tell you, I have 10,000 recordings at this point, all of which come down to, I'm so grateful. Thank you. I am so grateful. There's no ability to express the level of gratitude that I feel. I'm the luckiest person on the planet. I'm so grateful.
It's
just all there is to say.
Yeah, and I can't even say it. it's too big. So I'm
it's
just hugging
big.
Everyone and just, you know, whatever.
Yeah, walking around twinkling, I think it's the best we can offer.
Yeah. So
I
just wanted to share that.
For you.
Thank you so much, and, you know, thanks for everything.
Yes. Thank you. And good night.
Okay, good night. Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Sherry.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Lisa. Sherry, I'm going to need some more Kleenex over here. I know.
People are something, huh?
Oh, amazing.
People doing practice. Boy, we are so lucky.
Oh, my goodness, so privileged.
Mm-hmm.
So privileged to be given a clear map of how life works.
Mm-hmm. And then to have the wherewithal to follow it and to be surrounded by people who are also on the same journey. It's astounding.
Yeah, so inspiring. So inspiring. Mm-hmm. I'm really grateful, too. Can you? It's really not a big surprise.
You got your own 10,000 recordings, right?
Yes, I do. We're going to break for an important message, Sherry, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Janice from Dallas.
Well, hello, Janice.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Hey, I'm calling about, I think I'm just in it right now, or have been for a little while. I've recently, this is just the summary of it all, recently was in a situation where I could really watch how conditioning works. Like, I'm a 3 on the Enneagram, so a performer, and it's all about succeeding and failing and performing and all that. So I got to watch all these subtleties of how it works. And then when I began doing this new thing, which was teaching yoga, I can't see that I do it any differently. I was so excited to see all of the setup and the standards of conditioning, and almost an addictive draw if there was ever anything to achieve, like, you know, even getting a blue ribbon for cleaning a toilet. It's like this addictive draw to wanting that blue ribbon.
That's a clear image.
And it's funny. But then I'm stuck with, I don't seem to be doing anything any differently after seeing all of that.
Uh-huh. Well, yes, exactly. So, were you listening to the whole show?
I'm sorry, what?
Have you been here for the whole show?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So I got it, what was pulling my femur head out of the socket and causing my hip to go out, my iliacus, and my blah, 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 down to my sartorius and the knee and the whole thing, okay? I got it. I got
uh-huh.
it. And guess what? I wasn't any better.
Yeah.
Okay? So all that happened then was now I know what I need to work with.
Yeah, and just, well, I was going to say, and just be interested in, because you kept talking about how you're just, because you really want that, your knee to work, wasn't it? And just
yes.
being interested in it. But I don't
yes.
want to get too interested in it, do I? I mean,
well,
it can just draw me in.
You want to get, no, not to get drawn in, but you want to get really interested in the process. So that's a really, that's an important distinction that you're pointing at there. So
uh-huh.
if I want to see how something works, I need to be disidentified enough, step back enough, that I can watch the process, the steps of the process. Now, if I get pulled into it, then I've stopped being the solution and now I'm the problem, right? So
right.
It's very important that you see how it works. That's different from being in relationship with the process.
So I think I'm just in relationship with, I mean, I see it working. You know, I'm aware that I'm doing it a particular way, but I'm identified with being dissatisfied that it's still there, I guess.
That's right. So that is ego dissatisfied with ego, because ego isn't improving in the way that ego says ego wants ego to improve.
Yeah, and
so
in that, that whole thing, there's an I involved.
Yeah, so we can get a sense from it, with that there is no intention of any change ever happening.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is good. You've seen that, right? So you're in the process of seeing how the process works. And you're stepped back enough that you recognize that part of the cycle. Yeah? So this would actually be a phenomenal time to do a process map.
Mm.
So this happens, then this happens, then I'm talking about this, and I'm feeling this, I'm believing that, then I make a plan to that, then I'm, okay, until you can see the whole thing. There it is. And you can, you know, you look down and you go, okay, I'm in this conversation about how sick I am of this. Let's see, that would be the part where ego is dissatisfied with ego's progress. Okay? Now, if you can do that, you're not in the process, right? You're observing it.
Right.
Okay? Which is what we want to do. And what you're headed toward is a critical point, which is as soon as you get it all, you want to stop being in relationship with it, because otherwise it's just ego observing ego in ego's loop, right? We don't want to live there. So
right.
there you are. You see it all, okay? I got it. I see it all. Then what you ask yourself, or you call me back and I'll ask you, all right, what is the one behavior that I can change? Just one. What is the one behavior that I can change that's going to throw a spanner in these works?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Do you have a sense right now of what that might be?
I have a little bit of a sense, because it's what's really in this time frame that I'm working with this, the thing that gives me the most relief or peace,
uh-huh,
is accepting that everyone's doing the best that they can, including myself.
Uh-huh. And so do you have a...
Is that what you're asking? Is that along the lines of what you're asking?
It is. So a different way to frame that is, so you're teaching yoga, and this is when it's really coming up. Is that... Did I understand that from what you start out
with?
Yeah,
because my whole point in teaching yoga is to be present with people. And I'm not. I am to some extent, but I'm more self-conscious about it.
Okay. So here's the thing. Accepting that I'm doing the best I can, and so is everyone else. That's great, but it's a bit amorphous. A more direct behavior change would be, there will be no reviews of any of my classes.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I can say that fast and easy, and you can hear it and go, and we all go, yeah, that would do it all right. Is that
yeah.
going to be easy? Probably not. Okay?
Yeah.
So in the beginning, it's just going to be, you come out of the class, and for whatever period of time, your focus has to be just riveted to, I am not going to think about that. I'm not entertaining any conversation about the class. No. And then pictures will pop up, and you just say, no, I'm not doing that. You get your recorder, and on your recorder is saying, I'm doing the best I can. Self-consciousness is a natural part of being new at something. All this is going to change over time. I'm doing fine. I haven't killed anybody yet. You know, it's all fine, and you're listening to those recordings. Okay, so you set up a whole support system for yourself so that there are no reviews from any of your teaching experiences. And that's
yeah.
the one behavior change, right? That's it.
Yeah.
That's all you focus on until you match that.
Yeah. I'm just thinking I need to include no previews either.
No previews. No, I'm not entertaining any conversation about my teaching at all.
About what it should or will look like.
Nope.
Yeah.
None of that. None of that. I'm going to go there. I'm going to be... I'm going to allow life to lead the class. I'm going to do the very best that I can. And if there's any feedback, life will give it to me. And it will come in the form of non-judgmental, kind insight.
Yeah, that would be
all I'm
fair.
To. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the assignment. And so you watch that process. You watch it so that you can stay uninvolved.
And I'm learning to do it with this content.
That's exactly right. The process, that's exactly right. Here's
it could be very useful for all content.
For the rest of your life.
Yeah. Okay. I could do that.
You can do this.
I can.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And you'll keep us posted. Because it's what we're all working on.
Yeah.
Right? This is your content. Everybody who's trying to wake up and end suffering has whatever is the current content, right? And that could be current over months, over years. It could be current today. It could be current in this moment. But we're all working to do the same thing.
Yes. And I did get to see just it's the cruelty of the whole system.
Oh, it's so astounding.
It is.
So ugly. You know, Janice, I'll tell you, I have, you know, like three major wishes for human beings, and one of them would be exactly what you expressed. Because I am convinced that when people really get how vicious, nasty, ugly, and hateful it is, they will stop feeding it, stop turning to it, stop listening to it. It's just vile.
Yeah.
It has nothing to give us.
It's just that it's subtle, but it's trying to lead you into the viciousness always.
Always. Always.
Yeah.
You know, it's the candy to the little kid.
Yeah.
Anything nice that it brings to us is the equivalent of offering candy to a little kid to get the little kid in the car.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
And it's going to get real ugly as soon as that door closes.
Yep.
So there's an image for us all to keep in mind.
Yeah.
That's who we don't want to get. And we don't want to get in the car with.
We don't.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So thank you so much.
Okay. You're so welcome. Keep us posted.
Okay, I will.
All right.
Thanks,
Dennis. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Well, I'm feeling blessed tonight, Sherry.
Me too. Me too. Let's make a recording that just says thank you.
thank you. That'll be homework for all of us.
Yeah, and make it about a lifetime long.
Great.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Michael.
Thank
Good
you,
night.
Sherry. Good night.